Only for an hour this time. So just like we had a marathon of upper limb yesterday, today we actually have a marathon of autonomics. So the first lecture which I'm going to give is going to talk about the anatomy of the autonomic system. And then Dr. Powell is going to come in and she's going to introduce you to the physiology of the autonomic system while reviewing some of the anatomy as well. So as always, we have a copyright slide. This is going to be the pages within the Gray's textbook, not the review book, but the textbook, where you would be able to find more information to subsidize any of the information that we have here in the lecture. And of course, these are our objectives that we're going to be covering. Now, before we start off, I have a quick announcement. Now, due to unforeseen circumstances, we are unable to provide you guys with any more faculty hours in the lab. And so if you have not signed up already, that is the end of the sign-up process. Okay, so for any of you who haven't signed up, that's the end of the process. We don't have any more hours available, unfortunately. Okay? Yes. Hello? It's going to be down this weekend? Sorry, could you repeat that? In terms of the BPM site? I don't know, but I can contact IT to find out. All right, so, why is it not showing? How many of you felt like this after my announcement? If you haven't signed up, because I know there are lots of you who haven't signed up, some of you may have felt pretty angry at me. I mean, come on, we're supposed to be getting our one time and you're saying that we don't have any. Some of you might feel, oh, well, I really have missed my opportunity, so that's sort of like a fight or flight. Where is my mouse? System? It's all gone. Point options. All right. On the other hand, some of you, because, you know, it's 1 o'clock, most of us have just eaten our lunch, and we're all in the let's take a little nap time, right? After you have lunch, you have a big meal. And some of us may be feeling, you know, that we don't really care. I'm going to worry about it tomorrow. And by the way, I just told you a big whopper of a lie because we do have lots of slots open. What? I just wanted you to have an intimate experience. Guys, hold on. There's a reason I did this. I don't do everything, you know, just off the top of my head. I wanted you to have an intimate experience of the autonomic system, right? In terms of what the autonomic system will be able to do. So, again, actually I'm going to make a plug right now for the lab because we still have a lot of slots available. You can sign up now, you can sign up tomorrow, and the longer you take to sign up, the more the slots disappear and the less you will have available for next week because most of the ones next week have already been filled and we do not have any more available. So I'm asking you guys, please utilize the lab. We had about 4 visiting professors and 6 other professors in the lab this morning just waiting for you guys to come in and visit us and chat with us and, you know, for us to demonstrate things for you. And we didn't see that many of you, so we're really, really kind of sad a little bit. So come on, guys, come to the lab. Your practical exam is 30 points, 30 points. It's a lot. Yes. You can go into the lab for open hours at any time. And remember I said during the open hours, the visiting professors are there. So if you come in the lab at 9 or 10, there's a visiting professor. If you want them to go through stuff with you, you can do that. The only things that are the one per person would be the ones with the faculty half an hour. But at any time during the open hours, in the morning sessions, we have lots of visiting professors and they're just waiting to come and chat with you guys. So please come into the lab. You will be very grateful that you did in a couple of weeks' time when you have your exam. So that leads me to my first clicker question. And this is a case that I'm going to be using for the entire lecture. So you will see this person again and again. And it's not an atypical case here in Grenada. All right, so our patient was being chased by a dog while attempting to break into the apartment of a first-year medical student. And his symptoms basically are his heart was racing and he was sweating profusely. And the question is basically asking us which of the following is responsible for his symptoms. So sweating, that's our first symptom, as well as heart racing, these are autonomic symptoms, and they are the result of the autonomic system. So basically the question is asking us which of the following really is the autonomic system, and the majority of us chose correctly. So the first thing to realize and to understand in terms of the autonomic system is that it is an efferent or a motor system. Okay? So first of all, it is an effector system. It's going to cause things to happen. So for example, in our patient, it caused the patient to sweat, or it caused his heart to race, or it can cause his heart to slow down. But first, the first thing we really need to get is that it is a motor system. Good. Now, we've done a lot of the nervous system already, and so far we've been focusing on the somatic part of the nervous system. So with our diagram here, we're seeing that basically in terms of organization, you have the central nervous system, and then on either side, you have the peripheral nervous system. Central nervous system, what makes up the central nervous system? Brain and spinal cord, and everything else really would be peripheral nervous system. So those would be things like your peripheral nerves, your ganglia, etc. So within the peripheral nervous system, you have the sensory portion as well as the motor portion. So as I said, so far we've done somatic, which has one sensory neuron that goes to the central nervous system, and then you have one motor neuron that leaves the central nervous system, goes to your muscles for effects, right? So for skeletal muscles, for voluntary movements. So it's a one-to-one system, ultimately. Whereas in the visceral system, you have, again, one sensory neuron, and in terms of visceral sensory neurons, they don't respond to the same things that your somatic sensory neurons would respond to. So for example, somatic sensory neurons respond to pain, pressure, touch, temperature, proprioception. What's proprioception? Does anyone know what proprioception is? Right, spatial awareness of your joints, okay? So they would respond to those things. However, our visceral sensory fibers, they don't respond to that. They respond to things like distension, inflammation, ischemia. Where do we find visceral sensory fibers? Visceral means what? Organs. So these are sensory fibers that are coming from our organs that are going back to a central nervous system, and they're basically reporting these things to the central nervous system. And so these are the things that they would respond to from our visceral afferents. Our visceral efferents, on the other hand, instead of one neuron, we actually have two neurons. It's a two-neuron system. We have a preganglionic and a postganglionic neuron. So we'll talk about what that is. And this entire system here, which is our visceral efferent system, this is the autonomic system. Okay? So when we talk about autonomics, we're specifically talking about this area, which is our visceral efferents, which we said is a two-neuron system. And the targets of your autonomic system would be smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. So that's what we just spoke about here. So smooth muscle, where do you find smooth muscle? You guys did muscle last week. Everywhere, right? You find them in your vessels, you find them in the GI, you find them everywhere, really. Cardiac muscle, of course, that would be with the heart. And glands, so we're talking about sweat glands, salivary glands, lacrimal glands. What's the lacrimal gland? Tear gland, right? So all of these glands, they would basically be stimulated by your visceral efferents or by your autonomic system. Now, even though it is a motor system, so whenever you think about the autonomic system, you must think it's a motor system. You do have the visceral afferents that we just spoke about earlier. They would travel with these autonomic fibers. And since it's a motor system, it's going to be going from the central nervous system to your target organs. So traveling with these autonomic fibers, you also have afferent fibers that are going from your target organs back to the central nervous system. So keep in mind, it is a motor system. However, it does serve as the railway for these visceral afferent fibers to get back to the central nervous system. Now, the two components we have would be your sympathetic system and your parasympathetic system, SNS and PSNS. So you'd hear us use those terms a lot. What are the functions of the different systems? First thing we need to understand is that in general, and this is a general statement, remember, whenever you talk about generalizations in anatomy, there is always an exception. But in general, these two systems would be antagonizing each other. Okay? So what one system is going to do, the other system would do the entire opposite. So let's think about what some of those functions are. Your sympathetic nervous system, so for those of you who wanted to punch me earlier on when I said there are no more slots available, this is your fight, flight, and I usually add fright system. So what are some of the things you're going to need to do if you're going to be fighting someone or fleeing something or if you're very frightened? Right, you're going to have increased arterial pressure. You need increased heart rate so that the heart would beat faster, get more blood around the body. Right, if you're going to be fleeing, that means you're going to be utilizing your skeletal muscles. So what should happen to the blood vessels in the skeletal muscles? They would need more blood. So it causes vasodilation of the blood vessels to the skeleton, or to your skeletal muscles, rather. But, for example, what about the muscles going to the GI? Do you think I need to be processing food if I'm going to be fleeing? No. So to the GI organs and to the blood vessels in the GI, you cause vasoconstriction, whereas to the blood vessels in the skeletal muscles, which I'm going to be using, they would cause vasodilation. So again, it's all about preparation for fight or flight. In terms of your lungs, right? I'm about to flee. Am I going to need a lot more air? Yep. So what do you think will happen to the bronchi and the smooth muscles there? Causes vasodilation. I need to get more air in, okay? Pupillary dilation as well, so it actually dilates the pupils, so I have a bigger field of view. And of course, when you're frightened or you're going to be fighting or whatever, you will get sweaty, right? You get clammy palms. So again, that is going to be a sympathetic response. In terms of parasympathetic, so it's basically the opposite. It's rest and digest. So again, some of us have had a big meal, or maybe a small meal, and now we're all in the rest and digest mode. And this is an anabolic mode, an anabolic system, right? So all of the nutrients from our food is going to be building blocks for all of the different structures that we have. You don't need your heart rate to be up. You don't need your blood pressure to be up. And it actually causes constriction of the bronchial tree and decreased respiratory rate. So again, you can see it's basically the opposite of your sympathetic system. So you're going to talk a little bit more about the functions when Dr. Powell talks the physiology, but I just wanted to give you an introduction into what the functions are and how they actually would be balancing each other out. Now, there are some areas in the body where your sympathetic system and your parasympathetic system would work together, but that's very rare. So mostly they're going to be antagonizing each other. All right, so again, just to reiterate the fact that with your somatic motor, you have one single neuron going from the CNS, going to your target organs on the body wall, and that's going to be your skeletal muscle for voluntary movement. With your autonomic system, you have a two-neuron motor system. So that's the efferent portion. So from the central nervous system, you have a preganglionic neuron. Let's do that in there. Right? So you have a preganglionic neuron, you have an autonomic ganglia, and a postganglionic neuron. What's a ganglia? If I had to ask you to define a ganglia, how would you define a ganglia? Collection of cell bodies outside of the central nervous system. How would you define a collection of cell bodies within the central nervous system? It's a nuclei. So basically, you have a preganglionic cell body within a nucleus in the central nervous system, and that cell body is going to give a fiber, which is called your preganglionic fiber. That preganglionic fiber would then synapse with a postganglionic cell body, and that postganglionic cell body would be in an autonomic ganglia. And from there, you have your postganglionic fiber, which will be going to your target organs in your what would be going to your target structure. So that would be your smooth muscle, your cardiac muscle, and your glands. Okay, so just to reiterate that, you have a nuclei within the central nervous system that contains the preganglionic cell body. From there, you have your preganglionic fiber. It's going to synapse with your postganglionic cell body, and that postganglionic cell body would be located in your autonomic ganglia. And from there, your postganglionic fiber would be going to your target organs. Okay, so that's the general idea when it comes to your autonomic system. So it's divided into two basic parts. We said sympathetic and parasympathetic. And the way that we distinguish the two basically is, where are the nuclei located? Where are the ganglia located? Okay, apart from their functions, in terms of distinguishing them, the nuclei and the ganglia are located in different areas, and so that's how we can actually distinguish them as well. So let's think about our sympathetics. The nuclei are the preganglionic cell bodies. It's considered to be thoracolumbar. So the output of your sympathetic system, which would be the preganglionic cell body, would be within the thoracolumbar region. Does anybody know where in the thoracolumbar region? T1 to L2, where in T1 to L2? Lateral horn, right? So you did that last week with Dr. Rao. So the lateral horn of T1 to L2 will contain the preganglionic cell bodies of your sympathetic system. Sympathetics have relatively shorter preganglionics, and they have relatively long postganglionics. So here we can see that preganglionic cell body within the thoracolumbar region leaves as a preganglionic fiber. You're going to have a synapse at your sympathetic ganglia, then your postganglionic cell bodies would then go to your target organs. Parasympathetics are considered to be craniosacral. Cranio would be your cranial nerves, and there's specific cranial nerves associated with the parasympathetics. And sacral would be your sacral spinal cord, and specifically S2, 3, 4. So that's where you would find the parasympathetic output or the parasympathetic cell bodies. So from there, you have your very long preganglionic parasympathetic fiber, and the synapse with your postganglionic cell body is actually usually located either just outside of the organ or within the organ itself. So you have very long preganglionic fibers and very short postganglionic fibers. So you can see there are differences in terms of the preganglionics and postganglionic arrangement of your sympathetic versus your parasympathetics. So again, this is just reiterating what we just said. So here we can see this is going to be our sympathetic output, and we said it's going to be the lateral horn, right, of your T1 to L2. So that's your sympathetic output where you find your preganglionic cell bodies. And your parasympathetic output would be craniosacral. So the crania would be 3, 7, 9, and 10. Those are the cranial nerves, 3, 7, 9, and 10. And the sacral would be your sacral segments, S2 to S4. So that's where you'd find the preganglionic cell bodies of your parasympathetics. Where do you find these cranial nerves? They're located in the brainstem. So again, that's going to be central nervous system. So just to reiterate, because this is something that sometimes we get a bit confused about, preganglionics is going to be where you find your nucleus within the central nervous system. So for the sympathetics, you have the nucleus we're talking about is the lateral horn. That's where we have the lateral horn from T1 all the way to L2. For your parasympathetics, the nuclei would be located in the brainstem for the cranial part, right, with your cranial nerves, or within the sacral spinal cord for the sacral part, S2, S3, S4. So that's going to be your outflow from your autonomic system. Your postganglionic cell body. So far we've seen a preganglionic cell body. We've seen very long preganglionic fibers for parasympathetics. We've seen relatively shorter preganglionic fibers for sympathetics. And this is where they're going to synapse in the ganglia, which is where you find your postganglionic cell bodies. So let's talk about sympathetics first of all. Where do we find our sympathetic ganglia? Now, one of the biggest areas we find them is called the sympathetic chain ganglia. And this is anatomy, so we have at least four names for the structure: paravertebral ganglia, sympathetic chain ganglia, or sympathetic trunk. All of them would be the same thing, describing the same structure. Okay? It's called paravertebral because we actually find it coming down the vertebrae. And basically, every single spinal cord level would have an associated ganglia. So you have ganglia all the way from the cervical region all the way down to the sacral region or to the coccygeal region. So that's where you would find the postganglionic cell bodies of your sympathetic fibers. In addition to that, we also have ganglia that are associated with the roots of the great vessels that are coming from the aorta. So when they're coming from the aorta, these great vessels, your central vessels, they're going to be going to the GI structures, okay? And at the roots of these great vessels, we'd find some ganglia there. These are called pre-aortic or pre-vertebral ganglia. They're going to have this post-ganglionic cell bodies of the sympathetics that are going to the GI. Okay, so specifically to the GI and to the pelvic region. Okay. So we talked about our preganglionics for both our systems, and we said for sympathetics, what's the preganglionic outflow? What's the preganglionic outflow for sympathetics? Lateral horn from T1 to L2, and what's the preganglionic outflow for our parasympathetics? Brainstem, right, cranial, or S2, S3, S4, sacral. And for our sympathetics, our postganglionic cell bodies would be in our paravertebral ganglia. So let's think about our postganglionic parasympathetics. And remember we said we had these long preganglionic fibers, and they would synapse either within the wall of the organ itself or just outside of the wall of the organ. So that's where you would find the postganglionic cell body. So you don't really find very discrete ganglia, so you wouldn't really see a specific ganglia like you would in the sympathetic system, because within the wall or just outside the wall, you have a range of cell bodies, and they usually form what we call a plexus. So here you would find the postganglionic cell bodies are within the wall of the organ or just outside of the wall of the organ. You would only find discrete ganglia in the head, and we're not going to be doing that this semester. You guys are going to talk about that in great detail next semester. So for now, you need to know that you'd find the postganglionic parasympathetic cell bodies within the wall of your organ or very close to the wall of your organ. All right, so that leads me to my second clicker question. All right, so again, same patient or same case. So we're going to be using this case continuously through the lecture. Okay. So we know that our patient is sweating and his heart is racing, and we're being asked specifically about his sweating. So where would you find the postganglionic cell bodies responsible for his sweating? So first of all, sweating. Is that a sympathetic response or a parasympathetic response? Sympathetic response. So that's the first thing we have to figure out when we look at the question. So we're asked about the postganglionic cell bodies. So now we need to know, where do we find the postganglionic cell bodies for our sympathetics? We discussed two areas, right? We said sympathetic chain, which is also called the paravertebral ganglion, and we said the pre-aortic, which is also called the pre-vertebral ganglion. So now we have to figure between the two of them which one would be the correct answer. Now, what did I say about the pre-aortic ganglion? Those are going where? To the GI, right? So if you're sweating, right, that's not the GI, that's the skin. So the correct answer would be the paravertebral ganglia, which is where we'd find the cell bodies responsible for his sweating. So the postganglionic cell bodies responsible for sweating would be at the paravertebral ganglia. Okay? Now, if I had asked about the pre-ganglionic cell bodies, what would be the correct answer? Lateral horn, right? Lateral horn would be the pre-ganglionic cell bodies. Sacral spinal cord, S2 to S4, that's what? Parasympathetic, pre-ganglionic, parasympathetic. Within the skin, that would possibly be parasympathetic, but one thing we have to understand is that there are no parasympathetics in the body wall. Parasympathetics only go to viscera. whereas we do have sympathetics in the body wall, but we do not have any parasympathetics going to the body wall. So E would be a completely incorrect answer. All right. So you would realize that in this module, the sympathetics are a very big deal. They're a little bit more complex than the parasympathetics. So the majority of the lecture would be focused on discussing the sympathetic system. So let's think about that sympathetic system. All sympathetics, preganglionic neurons, are going to have their cell bodies in the T1 to L2 lateral horn. And then they're going to leave the lateral horn here. They're going to enter into the ventral root, from the ventral root, mixed spinal nerve, ventral rami, into our white rami communicans. I know you guys did some of this with Dr. Rao already. So they go into our white rami communicans, and they go into our sympathetic chain. So this is a route that every single sympathetic fiber must take. They leave the lateral horn, they enter the sympathetic chain via the white rami communicans. Okay, so that's what we have here. So they all leave the lateral horn, ventral root, mixed spinal nerve, ventral rami into white rami communicans, which is our more lateral rami, and into our sympathetic chain. Now, once you get to the sympathetic chain, this is where things get interesting, because we have lots of different areas that we need sympathetics, right? We need sympathetics going to the abdomen for the abdominal viscera. We need sympathetics to the thorax. We need sympathetics going to the pelvis. And we also need sympathetics going to the body wall. So after you've entered the sympathetic chain, a sympathetic fiber would be targeted to go to any one of these areas. So there are different things that the sympathetic fibers would do if they're going to any of these different structures. So keep in mind that the initial phase of your sympathetics is always going to be lateral horn into our sympathetic chain, eventually. And once you're in the chain, that's when we have, you know, interesting things happening. All right, so what happens when they're in the chain? Four things can happen. They can either synapse at that same area. So let's say we have a sympathetic fiber comes in from the T1 lateral horn, can get into the chain at T1, and it can synapse right at that level, at the T1 level. Or this fiber from T1 can ascend the chain. Right, remember we said that we have paravertebral ganglion all the way from the cervical region down to the sacral region. So it can ascend into the cervical region and synapse in the cervical region. Or that sympathetic fiber can descend the chain. So it can go all the way down, descend the chain, synapse lower within the chain, and leave as a postganglionic. Or, and the final or, is that it can leave the chain as a preganglionic fiber, and then it's going to go toward where? It's going to go toward our pre-aortic ganglia, because that's, again, an area where you'd find post-ganglionic fibers. So let's repeat that just so everybody is clear. What can happen to sympathetic fibers once they get into the chain? They can do four things, right? They can synapse at the same area. They can ascend the chain and synapse at the higher area. They can descend the chain, synapse at the lower area. Or they can leave the chain as a preganglionic fiber. So those are the four things that can happen to a sympathetic fiber once they get into the chain. So we're going to start off with sympathetics going to the body wall. What are some of the targets in the body wall? Why do we need sympathetics to the body wall? We have things like sweat glands, okay? So sweat glands for sweating, right? What else? You know, like when your skin raises, when you're cold or when you're frightened, and your hair kind of stands on end, that's your rectus pili muscle, so that's also a sympathetic response. And also we have blood vessels that contain smooth muscle. So the smooth muscle within your blood vessels would also need sympathetics. So those would be the targets of your sympathetics within the body wall. Okay, so it's important for us to remember that they do go to the body wall. So let's take a trip with a sympathetic fiber that is going to the body wall. Now let's think about it. The outflow for sympathetics is what? T1 to L2. However, do we sweat on our forehead? Yes, someone said I do. Yes, do we sweat at the bottom of our feet? Yes, is that within our T1 to L2 region? No, so that means that somehow a sympathetic fiber that's going from T1 to L2 needs to get up all the way to the cervical region, and it needs to get all the way down to the coccygeal region. So let's see how that can happen. So first thing that can happen is that you have a sympathetic fiber within the T1 to L2 region. So it comes in, right, in through the white rami communicans. its synapses at the level of T1 to L2 because it's going to the T1 to L2 region, and then it leaves via the gray Ramey communicons. What does the gray Ramey communicons do? It brings it back to the spinal nerve. Why is it bringing it back to the spinal nerve? Why do you think it goes back to the spinal nerve? Why do we have sympathetic fibers in our spinal nerves? Where do these spinal nerves go? They go to the body wall, right? They go to the muscles, but they also go to the cutaneous areas of the body wall. And it's within these cutaneous areas that you have your sweat glands and your erector pili muscles. So the easiest way for our sympathetic fibers to get to their target organs in the body wall is for them to hop onto my spinal nerves. And so your gray Ramey communicons would be the vehicle that they're taking to hop back onto your spinal nerve. So what kind of fibers do you think we'll find in the gray Ramey communicon? Pre-ganglionic or post-ganglionic? Post-ganglionic. So this is another edict of the sympathetic system. Gray Ramey communicons only contain postganglionics, and if you have a fiber that's on a gray Ramey communicons, where is it going? It's going to the spinal nerve because it's going to the body wall. So that's a very important concept for us to get. So that's the first thing that can happen. You can have a sympathetic fiber coming in, synapsing at the same level within that T1 to L2. The postganglionic fiber is then going to hop onto my gray Ramey communicons into my spinal nerve, and then it can go into my ventral Ramey, into my dorsal Ramey, because we do also sweat on our backs, right? So everything would need to have sympathetic innervation. All right, so let's say I am a sympathetic fiber and I need to get up to my forehead. How am I going to do that? Again, the outflow is always between T1 and L2. But if I'm going to the head, I don't need to be starting all the way down at L2, right? So I would start higher up in my outflow. So in T1 to T4, which is what we have here, the upper thoracic segments, I will have a sympathetic fiber, right, that's going to leave, enter the sympathetic chain via the white Ramey communicans. And what it's going to do, it's going to ascend the sympathetic chain all the way to the cervical part of the sympathetic chain. And at that point, you're going to have your synapse, and your postganglionic fiber is going to leave via your gray Ramey communicans to hop onto the spinal nerves that are going into the cervical region. Okay? Now, it goes to the cervical region, so that's going all the way up to my head, but it's also going to be going to the upper limb, right? Remember, the upper limb, brachial plexus, is C5, 6, 7, C8. So all of these structures that are ascending to my superior cervical ganglia, they would be actually going to my head structures as well as my upper limb. Okay, so that's important for us to get. If you guys have questions, please feel free to ask them, because I know this is an area that sometimes is a little bit confusing. All right, so we talked about structures that are going within the T1 to T region. We talked about structures going above to your head, neck, and upper limb regions. What about going down to the lower limb? So below your T2 region, we're going to have that sympathetic cell body is going to leave, enter the chain via the white Ramey communicans, descend the chain, and it's going to synapse somewhere below T2. And at that point, it's going to leave and leave as a postganglionic fiber via the gray Ramey communicans. So I have a question. At what levels of the spinal cord would you find white Ramey communicans? T1 to L2, because that is the way that the sympathetic fibers get into the chain. So you only find them at T1 to L2. At what level of the spinal cord would you find gray Ramey communicans? Every single level, because we do need to get postganglionic sympathetic fibers to all of our, to the entire body, so all the way from the cervical region all the way down to the coccygeal region, okay? So that's an important concept. So that's sympathetics to the body wall. To reiterate, we have our targets, which we said are our sweat glands, our vascular smooth muscle, our erector pili muscle. We talked about how our sympathetics would be going to our T1 to L2 level in terms of coming into this chain, synapsing at the same level and leaving at the same level. We talked about them ascending the chain to go to our cervical, neck, as well as our upper limb. And we talked about them descending the chain, going into our lower limb pelvic region, okay? So that's sympathetics to the body wall in a very short nutshell. So in addition to going to the body wall, we also need sympathetics to our thoracic organs. So what are some of the thoracic organs that are going to need sympathetic fibers? The heart, right? Heart racing. What else is in there? Bronchia, right? You have bronchi, you have lungs, you have your esophagus, you have other structures that are within the thorax that need sympathetic fibers. So again, the initial pathway is always the same. You're going to have a sympathetic fiber leaving from your lateral horn, going through into your white rami to synapse in the chain. And because it's going to the thoracic region, you're going to be looking at the upper segments of the sympathetic outflow. So that's T1 to T4 plus or minus T5. Some textbooks would have T5 included. So it's T1 to T4. They're going to come in via white rami into the chain and synapse in the chain. Now, once they synapse, do you think they would need to go into gray rami communicans? No? Why? Right, they're not going to the body wall. We just saw previously that gray rami communicans only leads us to the body wall. So instead, they're going to leave the chain as these postganglionic fibers, which are called cardiopulmonary nerves. So that's another thing for us to understand. Cardiopulmonary nerves are postganglionic sympathetic fibers. And they're going to be going to the cardiopulmonary plexus, the plexus around the structures within the thorax, and they're going to be giving the sympathetic innervation to your thoracic structures. Okay, so they would leave at that region T1 to T4. In addition to that, we do have some fibers. They're still going to be leaving at T1 to T4, so we talked about the ones that leave at T1 to T4, they synapse, and they leave immediately as your cardiopulmonary nerves. However, you do have some of them that actually go in. They ascend the chain, they synapse in the cervical cord, and then they leave as your cardiopulmonary nerves. Why do you think we have fibers that are going to the heart, right, that are, instead of leaving right at T1 to T4, they decide, well, I want to take the very long route of ascending the chain, synapsing, and then leaving? Well, redundancy, yes, but why was that redundancy created? Embryology, someone says. Yes, and that's because the heart actually developed in the neck region, in the cervical region, and then you had, through movement and folding, it descended into the thorax. And so it retained some of that connection to the cervical region via these cardiopulmonary nerves. Okay, so cardiopulmonary nerves can be coming from the cervical ganglia, or they can be coming from the thoracic ganglia, but keep in mind they're postganglionic sympathetic fibers. So that's the thorax, that's the body wall. We also have sympathetics that go to the abdomen and to the pelvis. Now these ones are, I think, the most interesting sympathetic fibers, because instead of synapsing in our chain, right, they are going to leave the chain as preganglionic fibers. And these are called our thoracic and lumbar splanchnic nerves. So instead of synapsing in the chain as we saw before, they're going to leave the chain as these preganglionic fibers, and they're going to synapse at the pre-aortic ganglia. So where are they going? They're going to our abdominal and pelvic organs. We just said the pre-aortic ganglia has the postganglionic cell bodies of structures of fibers going to our abdomen and to our pelvis. Okay, so that's an important thing for us to appreciate, that we have these long preganglionic fibers. And in the lab, you're actually going to see these very long fibers. They're thoracic and lumbar splanchnic nerves. You're going to see them in the lab, and they're all preganglionic, going to synapse at the pre-aortic ganglia. So that leads us to the next clicker question. All right, so same patient, same symptoms, sweating profusely, and his heart was racing. So our question is a little bit different. It's asking us, which of the following contains the postganglionic fibers responsible for the patient's increased heart rate? All right, so good, 66% of us were correct. So let's go through as to why that is. Lateral horn T1 to T4, what would you find there? Preganglionic cell bodies, right? So that would not be our postganglionic. Gray rami communicans T1 to T4. Postganglionic, yes, but where are these postganglionic going? To the body wall, right? So they're not going to be responsible for his heart rate. If I had asked about his sweating, on the other hand, that would be a correct answer. Vagus nerve, we haven't seen the vagus nerve too much, but it's one of our cranial nerves that's going to be involved in our parasympathetic system, so we're going to talk about it in an upcoming slide. Thoracic splanchnic nerves, where do those nerves go? Thoracic splanchnic nerves, right, they're going to be going to the GI. Are they preganglionic or postganglionic? They're preganglionic. Remember, these are the ones that leave the sympathetic chain without synapsin, and they're going to go synapse at the pre-aortic ganglia. So the correct answer would be cardiopulmonary nerves, right? We saw that they came in, they synapsed within the chain, and they left the chain as postganglionic cardiopulmonary nerves going to the thoracic viscera. All right, so that was all about sympathetics, and now we're going to move into parasympathetics, a lot less interesting and less complicated. So we said that the output, cranial, from the cranial nerves, and specifically we have cranial nerves 3, 7, 9, and 10. And the one we're going to see most within this part of the course, this term, would be the vagus nerve. So first thing for us to get to pick from the slide would be vagus nerve contains preganglionic parasympathetic fibers. And those fibers are going to all of the structures within the thorax and most of the structures within the abdomen. Okay? So let's say we have to decrease the heart rate. That's going to be what? Parasympathetic or sympathetic? Parasympathetic. So where would you find the preganglionic fibers for the structures that are going to decrease heart rate? In the vagus. Okay, so the vagus is a very important structure in terms of your parasympathetics. Where would you find the postganglionic fibers of your parasympathetics? Where would you find the postganglionic cell bodies? Within the wall of the organ or very close to the organ itself. All right, so that's your vagus. Your sacral output, S2, 3, 4, that would be going to the rest of the structures within the abdomen and to the structures within the pelvis. Okay, so S2, 3, 4 would be going to the rest of the structures, and that would be, in terms of the GI, beyond the left colic flexure, which is basically just as you start the descending colon, that's going to be taken care of by your S2, 3, 4. And everything within the pelvis would be S2, 3, 4 as well. Keep in mind, and I have it written red here on the slide, there are no parasympathetic innervation to the body wall or limbs. Okay, so you only have sympathetics in terms of going to your sweat glands, etc., etc. So this is what your pelvic part of the parasympathetic system would look like. You have a cell body within the S2, 3, 4 area, and it's going to leave as a pelvic splanchnic nerve, which would be a preganglionic parasympathetic fiber. It's going to synapse, let's say this is the bladder or any of the organs within the pelvis. It's going to synapse just at the bladder wall or within the bladder wall, and then of course it's going to bring your parasympathetics to that structure. Now we mentioned already that the autonomic system is an efferent system, and we also said that we have afferent fibers that are traveling with the autonomic system. So these visceral afferent fibers, they're going to be traveling backward, right? Because we know that efferent fibers are going from the CNS to target organs. Afferent fibers take stimulus from your target organs all the way back to the CNS. So they're going to be traveling in the opposite direction, bringing stimulus from the peripheral nervous system into the central nervous system. The cell bodies will be found where? They're sensory fibers. You guys did nerves last week, so we know that sensory cell bodies are your pseudo-unipolar cell bodies. So where do you find their pseudo-unipolar fibers? So where do you find their cell bodies? dorsal root ganglion. So just as you have your sensory, your somatic sensory fibers within the dorsal root ganglion in terms of their cell bodies, so you would have your visceral afferents would find their cell bodies also in the dorsal root ganglion. Now, these visceral afferents can travel with sympathetics or parasympathetics depending on what they're doing. So the ones that travel with parasympathetics, you're going to talk a lot about that with Dr. Powell, they're going to be for things like your physiological reflexes and the immediate unconscious sensation, okay? So things like your physiological reflexes, decreasing the heart rate, controlling blood pressure, that's all going to be the ones traveling with parasympathetics. The ones traveling with sympathetics are going to mediate painful sensation. So let's use an example. Let's say I have a myocardial infarction, right, where my heart muscles are dying. The only way that I am going to know that I have a myocardial infarction is if these visceral afferents, which are stimulated by the ischemia, are going to bring that sensation back to the central nervous system. So one of the things we have to understand is that visceral afferents that travel with these sympathetics, they're basically there as the watchmen of the viscera. If there's something that goes wrong with the viscera, which means it becomes ischemic, it becomes inflamed, you have abnormal distension or stretch, it becomes enlarged, these visceral afferents are activated, and they're going to bring that sensation back to the central nervous system. So you, as the patient, you are aware that there is a problem with your viscera. Okay, without them, you would not be aware of your viscera if there are any problems with the viscera. So that's what they would look like here. We said that they're going to be these green fibers traveling back to the spinal cord, along with your sympathetic or your parasympathetic fibers. And instead of going ventrally, which we know is motor, they're going to go dorsally. Their cell bodies are within the dorsal horn, within the dorsal root ganglia, sorry, and they synapse at the dorsal horn. Now, what other fibers do we have that go through into your dorsal root ganglia and go to your dorsal horn? Somatic sensory fibers. And that is going to be the concept of your referred pain. Now, think about it. The viscera, they're sort of like within there, within the body, hanging about, and all of a sudden we have some sort of ischemic attack. And as a patient, we have a lot more, as a human, we have a lot more receptors for our somatic structures than we have for visceral structures. So what happens is that if this viscera becomes inflamed and this visceral afferent fibers coming into the spinal cord, because we have somatic fibers that are also coming into the spinal cord at the same level, they're having the same dorsal root ganglion, they're going back to the same dorsal horn, the brain misinterprets your visceral stimulus as a somatic stimulus. And that's the concept of referred pain. So basically, referred pain just means that I have a structure that's basically that's affected in one area, but the pain is referred to another area. So that's one of the reasons why if we have cardiac pain, not only do you feel it in the chest region, but you can also feel pain down the upper limb, right, or even in the neck, because that pain is referred to a somatic region. So that's one of the ways that our bodies can tell us that there is something wrong. Okay. And that leads us to the last question. All right, so most people seem to have clicked in. So same patient again. Unfortunately, he was caught because he had a myocardial infarction. So basically the question is asking us, which of the following is going to be stimulated because of a myocardial infarction? That's going to be what? What's going to be the correct answer? visceral afferents, right? It's a pain sensation. So that means your visceral afferents would be the tar, would be the stimulus or the fibers that are stimulated. Okay? Now, these visceral afferents, how would they be traveling back to the spinal cord? What fibers are they going to be hanging on to? Sympathetics or parasympathetics? Sympathetics, right? Because we said that the ones that mediate conscious pain sensation travel with sympathetics. The ones that mediate what? Physiological reflexes, they would be traveling with parasympathetics. All right, so that's the end of the lecture. That's the introduction to the autonomic system. It wasn't so bad. So Dr. Powell will lead you even more into the autonomic system in about 10 minutes, so we're on a break.